I really didn't think we could add more fuel to the political fires that are burning in this country, but we did, and it's clearly having an influence on today's market action with stocks sharply lower. And even with another round of export sales announcements this morning, the defensive attitude is spreading throughout the ag and energy markets.
Live from the 21st day of September, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Then it's on to Tom Karst from the Packer. And right after the news, a weather update from Michael Clark from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yes, yeah. This is the first time that I got to wish my son and his beautiful bride a happy anniversary.
No kidding.
Yes, I got to do that this morning for the first time. Yep.
Well, happy anniversary to them. This is the song, the day that Ozzy Osbourne wrote that cool Earth, Wind, and Fire song about. September 21st, baby. Here we are.
It's crazy, isn't it? Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah. So here we are. Another beautiful day in the middle of the country. Beta is causing some problems. It seems so weird. But beta is causing some problems down along the Gulf Coast. We'll talk to Michael Clark about that here coming up in just a little bit.
All right.
Boy, and I know that, you know what? I'm going to change up the order of your news here just a little bit.
If you could
go ahead and give us the lowdown on RBG. Let's start there, and then we'll talk about that a little bit.
Sure thing. The passing of venerated Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is expected to lead to some rocky terrain ahead for the upcoming election as Republicans hope to secure a nominee before voting day. That could complicate the passage of the House stopgap funding measure, which was expected to be out this week. Policy analyst Jim Wiesmeyer wrote for Pro Farmer, quote, "the worst of American politics," and that is a cringeworthy phrase, he says, may resurrect itself as both political parties gear up for a contentious debate to fill the Supreme Court opening following the Ginsburg death. And she was, if I'm not mistaken, the second female Supreme Court justice and a proponent for gender equality and women's rights in general, and very progressive woman, and a necessary fixture there, and she'll be difficult to replace. I mean, it's a big hole.
Oh yeah, yeah. Liberal but level-headed.
Yes,
is how I've. And I'm not saying that I agreed with every one of her opinions that she penned on the Supreme Court. I'm not by any chance.
No,
do I agree with every decision? But she. When she did pen an opinion, it was always well done. It was well thought out. It was she put in the work. There's no doubt about that. It's going to be a tough replacement, and the potential battle that I mean, good grief! I don't know how this is going to move forward over the next 45 days or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it is, it's not like these two, Trump and Biden, needed another issue, for the debates, but here it is.
And did I read somewhere that, Justice Clarence Thomas took the longest to confirm at 72 days?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This
I believe that Ginsburg was, if not the shortest, was one of the shortest.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 45 to 50 days, something like that.
Yep.
So they would have to get it rocking and rolling. And if they want to get something done before the election, they would have to get it moving, which there are comments about no options being off the table when it comes to preventing the Trump administration and the Republican-led Senate from filling that vacancy.
Yep.
It's all the wrong comments at the wrong time. It's like Jim said. I mean, it's the worst of American politics coming out. Here it comes.
For sure. And it could be a buzzer-beating game changer. if he can get it in before the election.
Crazy stuff.
In other news, in defiance of some dire predictions forecasting globalization would face a permanent threat, the Wall Street Journal reports world trade is rebounding much more quickly than expected. International trade in goods suffered its biggest hit this year in wake of the coronavirus slowdown since the Great Depression. Economists did warn, however, of a growing spirit of protectionism as many companies and nations rethink overseas supply chains. World trade flows remain below pre-pandemic levels. Trade is said to have snapped back robustly, however, recovering roughly half of the decline noted during the lockdowns by June. Chip?
Yeah. It's all about, and we've talked about this so much, right? But it's about that it's about the consumer confidence is going to drive the economic recovery. I just don't know if we've got enough of the consumers confident enough to push this thing forward.
Yep. Let me go lightning round so we can get to Michael. Okay. Fighter jets in Taiwan were scrambled for the second consecutive day yesterday as Chinese fighters once again flew across border waters in the Taiwan Strait. Meanwhile, China has instructed officials in Zhejiang province to craft plans for stockpiling bases for energy and agricultural products said to be part of its regional free trade-related infrastructure. And finally, the Secret Service and FBI are investigating an envelope mailed to President Trump, which has tested positive for the deadly poison ricin. Oh, and quickly, don't forget, initial sign-up for CFAP 2 begins today. Enrollment runs through December 11. Chip.
Very good. Thank you so much, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark, MWX.com. How you doing, Michael?
Hey, good, Chip. How are you?
Doing just fine, just fine. Is it going to stay tropical depression beta, or is it going to be hurricane beta?
I don't think it ever reaches a hurricane. It's looking pretty raggedy this morning, which is good news. It's going to bring some heavy rain, but it's not looking nearly what it was thought to be, you know, in the beginning.
Okay, that's good news. Where does the rain path take it? Does it stay in the south, southeast?
Yeah, it will. The core of the heaviest rain is going to go through eastern Texas, western Louisiana, and southwestern Arkansas. Some places there could get 3 to locally maybe 6 inches of rain. And then it'll kind of get carried away with a trough into the deep south. But it's not really going to bring much relief for the folks who haven't had any rain in the eastern Corn Belt for, you know, a month now.
Gotcha. Okay. Any change in the pattern for the Midwest?
It's going to get briefly warmer here in the Central Plains, but we're going to revert back to the pattern that we were in, which is cooler. It's going to get cooler again, and it's going to stay dry. So really, it's kind of steady as she goes. There's no real big problems surfacing. It's just, honestly, we're experiencing some classic fall-like weather, Chip. It's kind of, you know, there's not really any problems.
Yeah, the first day of fall is tomorrow morning, right?
Yeah, yep, exactly. Yeah. So we'll actually, it's not going to be 90 degrees with flooding rains. You know, it's going to be it's going to be nice. So I can't complain.
Excellent, Michael. Thank you so much. Good news from you. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Chip. Take care.
You bet. That is Michael Clark from BAMWX.com. Okay. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, about the latest trends that he has noticed from the used machinery market. And then at the bottom of the hour, Tom Kars from the Packer. It's going to be fun having a conversation with Tom about what's going on in the world of produce. That's coming up next on AgriTalk.
Join AgriTalk next week for Dairy Week, paying tribute to America's dairy farmers and celebrating the dairy industry. Dairy Week is presented by Elanco Animal Health with additional support from Aspen Veterinary Resources and Cargill Animal Nutrition. Register free at dairyherd.com/dairyweek.
You know, it wasn't until just a couple, 3 years ago that I learned that Earth, Wind & Fire and Ozzy had a collaboration like this.
Yes. Yep. And it's good to see, you know, bridges. People need to spend more time looking at the bridges in society. And for once, the entertainment industry has provided something positive for us, and that's a bridge, Chip.
Yeah.
A bridge. Over to the friendship shore. Come on over. The water's fine.
So I mentioned my son's first year anniversary. John Harrith hit me with a note saying that today is the 50-year anniversary of Monday Night Football.
Is that right?
50 years for Monday Night Football. So as I understand it, they are going to broadcast a game on ESPN, of course, but they're also going to have it on ABC again.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah.
See, that's the Monday Night Football
for this one
I
Monday night.
Is ABC. Dandy Don.
Dandy Don, that's the one that I was thinking of.
Yes.
Love it. Love
it's
it.
A different world,
I'm not
then,
even
my
sure
friend.
Who's playing. Let's bring in Greg Peterson. Machinery Pete, how you doing, Greg?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys, but I have some trivia for you on that first Monday Night Football game from September of 1970. Right. First of all, who was playing? Do you guys know?
No.
No. It was the New York Jets at the Cleveland Browns. The Jets kicked off, and Homer Jones ran it back for a touchdown for Cleveland. And I believe Cleveland won the game. And also the play-by-play announcer on that first game was, I think it was actually Keith Jackson. It was before
really?
Frank
Rumbling, bumbling, board. Stumbling, Keith Jackson.
Nelly. I think we got a correct response out of Big Apple Joe himself. He called the Jets. He was half right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ding.
Yeah.
Ding.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yes. We'll ding for that.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. Also, you made me happy with Earth, Wind, and Fire and Ozzy connection. That was beautiful. I like the bridge, Davis. Sign me up for that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Welcome to the friendship shore. Welcome. All are welcome.
Oh, that's fantastic. Fantastic. All right. How was the weekend, buddy? Everything good?
Yeah. Hey, weather's beautiful up here in Minnesota. Leaves are starting to turn. It was a classic fall weekend.
Very good,
Vikings,
very good.
We won't go down that road, so.
All right, let's get into it. What do you got for the pick of the week?
Pick of the week, this one's amazing, folks. I'm going to be blogging about this later today, but a 30-year-old combine, a 1990 John Deere 9500, 1,170 engine hours. This thing sold a week ago Saturday in Kingfisher, Oklahoma, another place I hope to get to someday. Brought $56,000 with no heads. And this sale was by Lepard Auctioneers, great auction company down there. And that is the highest auction price on a 9500 combine without a head in almost 7 years. You got to go back to January 6th of 2014 in Cranberry, New Jersey. We saw a 96 model with 1,648 engine hours go with, and that had 10 series updates on it. Bring 68,000. So 30 years old, 56K a week ago Saturday in Oklahoma. That is really strong.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's without the heads on. Is he going to have any trouble getting the heads in good condition for that?
I don't know that I noticed the heads on the sale listing off the top of the bat when I looked at it, but generally on a sale like this, and really all the other prices on the sale were sort of top of the line, kind of indicative that everything on this sale was super sharp. So whatever heads he had, I'm sure they sold pretty well on their own.
Yeah. 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 And you know, a 30-year-old machine with only 1,170 engine hours on it, that's just another one of those examples of a low hour machine bringing top dollar.
Yeah. If it's 9 years old, 12 years old, 15, 30 years old, tractor, combine, skid steer, if it's in good shape, one first or second owner like that always shedded. I mean, that's you're sitting on gold if you're trying to sell it or trade it right now, as that proves, $56,000. I mean, that wasn't done in a vacuum. There were a lot of people that wanted that thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Man, you mentioned skid steers on there. I'm looking for one just to do some projects around the acreage here. Yeah. And those doggone things, how do you find a good deal? No, I shouldn't say a good deal, because I'm sure that to those that are buying them at the price that they are listed at, they are considered a good deal. But for a little hobby guy like me, I mean, Greg, these price tags are.
Yeah, it's been tough for the hobby farm, the acreage owners wanting the small tractors, the little skid steers with little age on it, get away from the cost of new. And it's like, well, join the party, because that's what everybody wants. And it's things go in cycles, but the inventory situation is sort of not working in your favor. Like you say, it's hard to find them.
Yeah.
And when a nice one shows up, you're bidding against six other people that have been butting their head against the wall looking for it. So that's
right.
Sort of why we're seeing these prices.
Yep. That's exactly right. I think maybe it'd be smarter for me to just line up all my projects, get them compact, and rent one for a month or something like that. Might be a better
renting,
way of going about
renting
it.
Renting can be a good way to go. And I ascribe to the theory of opposite. So when nobody feels like buying, guess what? That is the time to buy if your powder's dry. So.
Yep. What else happened down there at that sale in Oklahoma?
Oh, a couple other head turners. An 05 John Deere 4995 Swather. Again, like new. 573 hours. That went for $70,000. How about a round baler? A 2011 John Deere 568. Under 2,000, actually under 1,900 bales on it. That brought 40,500.
Jeez.
Just for perspective, average auction price this year is about 16 and a half. And then they had an airplane, 1977. And forgive me if my pronunciation is wrong, but a Bolera Citrabria Model 70CA. That brought $30,000. I don't know too much about airplanes, but occasionally we do see them sell at auction. So always interesting.
And you've never seen a price that you won't record, so you go ahead and make note of it, don't you?
Oh, if it's a hot tub, an airplane, a helicopter, I don't care. I just want the price so that I can pass it along to somebody who's looking for a 40-year-old airplane. So,
that's fantastic, fantastic. Okay, take me to the to my neighborhood, Strawberry Point.
Tomorrow, day one of the 3-day. Jerry Everett pre-estate online collector auction, Strawberry Point, Iowa, sale by our friends at Amman Auctions, Amman Vintage Power. The one tractor on the sale is unbelievable. It's the first International 1066 ever made.
Oh,
serial
no.
Number ends in 07101, 71 model, and it only has 2,993 original hours. It's got a Hinneker cab. I blogged about it last week, I think like Wednesday or something. At that point, the online bid was already up to $54,000. Now this morning, it's at $60,000. And we just had a new record set last month on an International 1066 out in Hardington, Nebraska, August 14th. That one brought $46,000, kind of a rare bird. Only original was 794 hours. So I don't know how high that's going to go, but it's already at $60,000. And yeah, stay tuned, folks. I'll be reporting on that one tomorrow.
Oh man! The lineup of equipment at the Jerry Everett.
Some for everybody, right?
Auction
tons
is
of,
crazy.
Tons of tractors, yeah. Check it out, folks. Amman Auctions, Amman Vintage Power. It's 3-day sale. There's some fun stuff on that sale for everybody.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, let's go up to Brookings. What do you got up in South Dakota?
Yeah, last Friday, again, I sound like a broken record, but clean machinery, little age on it, low hours, is just so red hot now. So our friends at Burlage Peterson Auctioneers in real estate, they had a sale in Brookings last Friday. They had a 98 Case H 8940, super sharp looking, under 2,300 hours on it. That brought $69,000, second highest auction price in 4.5 years. Just like the other case we just mentioned, the only higher one was last month, August 20th, in Storden, Minnesota. We had one hit $79,000, a 98 model, 3,064 hours. But also on the sale last Friday in South Dakota was a 2,000 Case Edge MX-180 mechanical front, 1,971 hours. Really sharp, tight-looking unit, 58 and a quarter. And,
wow.
Chip, I had to go back to November 29th of 2001. Right after Thanksgiving weekend, probably, of 2001. That's the last time we saw an MX-180 without a loader sold higher. And that one was in Scandia, Kansas, a 2,000 miles. It was literally like new. 500 hours brought 60. So, again, 58 and a quarter Friday was sky
high. Wow. No doubt. All right, Greg, I can't believe we're out of time already. Thanks for the update, buddy.
Hey, catch you next week.
I got the chopper fired up for you, Greg. You're clear for takeoff, buddy.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. When we come back, Tom Karst from the Packer.
time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, we got the Dow off like 900 points here. It's putting some spillover pressure throughout all the markets, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of a risk-off morning so far this morning, Chip. And you mentioned the Dow and S&P off heavily as well. The dollar index is sharply higher, so you get that combination. I think it's just a recipe for the profit-taking that we're seeing here. We've had extremely strong run-ups in these markets, the grain and soy markets, and funds are heavily long soybeans in particular, but also long corn and wheat, and this is an opportunity for them to take some money out of the long side of the market.
Yeah, should not be surprised, I guess, after the rallies that we've seen in the grain markets. But still, you know, we're into that harvest season, Beej. Some hedge pressure from time to time shouldn't be unexpected either, right?
Right. I think both those statements are correct. I mean, you have the type of run-up we've had over the past 5 weeks, and you're bound to have some sort of a correction. And then you throw the harvest on top of it with the hedge pressure that you mentioned. And these types of days are going to happen. You know, just you have to watch the technicals for indications that of topping signs, and that, so that's more important than necessarily the penny for penny price movement.
All right, take us over to livestock. Some negative numbers there.
Yeah, more of the same. I think the stock market pressure is really getting into the cattle.
Yeah.
They watch that one fairly closely, and so we're seeing sharp price pressure there. And then the hogs, slight to moderate pressure, so not quite as heavy. But still, it's a negative day of trade across the grain and livestock market so far.
Yeah, corn's off 5 to 6 cents, soybeans off 10 to 12, 13 cents. Cattle are off a buck and a half, and hogs are moderately lower. Thanks, Beej.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Sanderson Farms for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Yes, sir.
Always good to get an update from Machinery Pete. We are on a string of conversations with Greg Peterson about, you know, it's hard to go a week without getting a report of a record price on some piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. And it's really an impressive run that we're seeing in that used machinery market, no doubt. Okay. My interest in this conversation, this upcoming conversation, was piqued last week when we had a conversation with Barb Iverson, president of Oregon Farm Bureau, about the wildfires out there and how it's impacting the produce growers along the West Coast. And I wanted to get Tom on and talk about it. Tom Karst is the editor of The Packer for Farm Journal. How you doing today, Tom? It's good to talk with you again.
Chip, good to talk to you. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Let's start there, Tom, because these wildfires out west are creating so many disruptions, aren't they?
That's for sure. I talked to a pear grower shipper in Medford, Oregon, and they alone have 30 employees that lost their homes to the fires, which is an incredible amount of loss for that company. And out of about 200 plus workers, 30 of them lost their homes. So just tragic. And as far as the pear crop and the apple crops, the winds that came along with the fires caused some fruit drop. And the Apple Commission is saying perhaps 5 to 10% of the apple crop, and perhaps pears too in the Northwest, could be affected because, you know, the winds just drop that fruit from the tree.
Yeah. And I mean, just that hot and I guess more dry air that they were dealing with up there. Tom, is there some quality issues that we ought to be thinking about?
You know, I know that one of the pear growers mentioned they gave N95 masks to all their orchard workers. And I think that air quality has settled down with rains and all that. But yeah, that's a concern for workers that are outside dealing with that. So
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, labor issues, in the markets that you deal with, Tom. Every time we have a conversation, we get to labor issues. How is the industry holding up through the whole COVID shutdown and getting people to show up to work to harvest product?
You know, as an essential industry, the workers are there. There have been some outbreaks at, you know, the packing houses or in the growing operations. But I haven't heard a lot of shortages of workers that's affecting the supply of the produce at this point. I mean, yes, there are shortages, but I think labor shortages, but I think the industry has been dealing with it quite well. And workers are showing up to work, and employers are taking precautions to try to protect them as they go.
Good. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've got a summit coming up this week, right?
Yeah, Sustainable Produce Summit, and you can find that at sustainableproducesummit.com. We have a lot of great panels talking about things like packaging, talking about things like growers' attitudes towards sustainability, consumer attitudes towards sustainability. So a lot of rich content, and still time to sign up if people are interested.
Last week we talked quite a bit about changing consumer behaviors and the shift over from eating out, eating at restaurants, eating at food service, to eating more at home. Has that caused any demand shifts in the produce, vegetable, fruit markets, Tom?
Oh, yes. I think maybe the strongest shifts there at the beginning of the pandemic. And they're still continuing. You got the restaurant sales that are coming back to a degree. I've heard maybe 40-45% of normal demand is what we're seeing right now. So there's still a ways to go. And so you're shifting more of that demand to the consumer who buys food at the grocery store. And they also order it now online, right? You probably, I don't know if you guys do that as well, but we've tried that a little bit, but not a lot. But so that's a factor for the industry. And then, of course, the CFAP program, they just announced a change that will make it a little bit easier for specialty crop growers to access that program, a little less red tape, and just kind of the ability to self-attest their income from 2019 and then receive perhaps 10% of that related to the coronavirus assistance. So a lot of moving parts in terms of the effect on the industry and also the relief provided to the industry. But so it's a complicated picture, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything's complicated in 2020, Tom, that's for sure. But when it comes to an industry like you cover, trying to keep up with where product needs to go and how it needs to get there and everything, I mean, and put on top of that, isn't this like the super busy time of the year?
That's right. We've got the fall harvest of apples and all through the year we have a lot of domestic activity, but for right now it's quite intense. So a lot of the big industry meetings are also this time of year in October. The Produce Marketing Association typically convenes. So we're doing all that virtually now, and it's trying to sort through all that and do it all digitally.
Yeah. It's not easy for anybody, that's for sure. Talk more about the Sustainable Produce Summit and the sustainability of all of the industries or segments of agriculture, Tom. It feels like it's gaining moving further and further up the priority list all the time. But is this a consumer driven? Is it producer driven? Where is the push on the sustainability side in produce?
That's a great question. You know, it's interesting because the growers feel like they're kind of, moving the ball on sustainability. But then when you survey consumers, which is part of our summit, we had a survey of both consumers and growers and retailers. Consumers feel like they're the ones that are kind of initiating the change. Sure. So I guess you could take from that both feel like they're part of the effort in sustainability. I think the growers sometimes feel that they're not rewarded enough by the market for the things that they do to improve their, you know, measures of sustainability. So that, you know, that's out there too. They're trying to figure out, you know, we want to do this, but I, you know, we hope that the market can recognize that we're going the extra mile and that we're doing more things to preserve agriculture for tomorrow. So it's a balance between what the consumer wants, what the retailer wants, and what the grower can do and still make a profit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You know, when I talk to Greg Henderson from Drovers, we talk about how the shut-in time period has changed some of the consumer wants when it comes to items in the meat case. Is there, you know, geez, you hate to talk about winners coming out of something like what we've gone through in 2020, but is there a list of winners in the produce side?
I think that early on, again, we had a lot of packaged produce that was moved and more shelf-stable items because people weren't going to the grocery store as much. So carrots, you know, oranges, apples, some of the more durable commodities did very well. And whereas maybe some of the more specialized commodities, especially commodities maybe that normally go to food service, kind of more of the fancier items that you typically go to a restaurant with, those were under pressure because there wasn't, you know, retailers weren't necessarily ready to take those on. So, yeah, I'd say the more durable items have done well, and they continue to do well. Potatoes, of course, onions, and some of the more tender fruit, more perishable, have suffered, at least in the beginning. I'd say now it's normalizing a little bit more out there, and things are kind of getting closer to normal demand for all the produce.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, it's one of my favorite times of the year because when you go through that produce aisle at the grocery store right now, it's got everything that you see. I do like my apples and pears and peaches and plums and all that stuff. So I'm telling you, it's a good time of the year to be going through the produce section. Hey, Tom, last thing here. The food box program, has that provided a source of demand for some of the produce items?
It has. It started in May, and it a lot of tens of millions of boxes of food, including produce, have been shipped out, and that provided some income to growers and some activity for distributors as well to pack those boxes. It's going to be maybe not as strong now here later in the year. So I think it's, but it has provided. I think the industry's been pleased with what it's done for the the sector. Yeah, the whole sector.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, good luck with the summit, Tom. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much, Chip. Good to talk to you.
You bet. That is Tom Karst, editor of The Packer. Okay. Now, when we come back, Davis and I are going to wrap things up, but we want you to be part of the conversation as well. Give us a call. It's 855-482-5524 right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AGI, your on-farm partner. Visit aggrowth.com for more information.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM. Real early in
life. I think Greg Peterson is still circling above.
Is still circling. Hey, could you do me a favor and fill for about the next minute? Because I just got a text from Wiesmeyer that I feel like I need to read.
Absolutely. I can fill for about a minute. Look at what's happened with the show this morning. I'm so excited. I'm hopeful for the future. We started with an anniversary. And now, then we talked about building a bridge to the friendship shore. We talked about RGB or RBG. We'll get to a little bit more on that. I also want to talk about Beacons of Hope. We've been talking about this for a few weeks. Agriculture Future of America, the AFA Leaders Conference, coming up on November 14, and they want to recognize beacons of hope in the ag community, people who have done just a little bit extra in these difficult and trying times, that have sent ripples out through the community, that have encouraged others, that have shown the resiliency that typifies the spirit of agriculture. And I know farmers, yes, are quiet people. They're not going to raise their hands and say, recognize me. That means you have to help them gain the recognition, because as much as they say they don't want it, they could sure use a shot in the arm right now, especially, yeah, if they've spent some time emptying their cup just a little bit to help somebody else. Help them fill that cup, exactly, back up. Once again, AFA Leaders Conference coming up on November 14. Accepting nominations for those good folks until September 30. That's coming right up. You can go to agfuture.org/hope. agfuture.org/hope. Shine a little sunshine into somebody's life, eh?
There you, won't go, you?
agfuture.org/hope.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I like the way that you described that too. Help somebody refill their cup if they've been pouring out some joy to somebody else. Help them refill it. Mm-hmm. I love that
for sure.
Good
for
stuff.
For sure, 100%. Yep.
Yep. Okay, I'm just going to read this from Wiesmeyer. I hope he doesn't mind.
Oh, careful now.
Yeah, but should be okay. Speaker Nancy Pelosi and House Democrats are set to release a stopgap government funding bill today without support from the White House or Senate Republicans. Jim says that is raising the risk of a federal shutdown at the end of the month.
Oh, boy.
The bill would extend current levels of spending for agencies past the September 30 end of the fiscal year through December 11th, but it does not include $30 billion for farm aid that the White House had sought and which Democrats want to negotiate as part of the separate stimulus negotiations, according to aides in both parties. So, there's another log for the fire.
Yeah, I kind of don't like the sound of that, Chip.
I like the way that you were talking way better than the way that Jim is talking.
Well, you know,
this is more fun.
Jim has got a deep well of knowledge that he's coming from here, and you know, he's got his finger on the pulse. And I just wonder what a shut-in government would mean for moving forward. Did we get here? Trump says that he was going to try and announce a nominee Friday or Saturday.
Yeah,
for that open Supreme Court seat.
Right after
he wants
the Ginsburg
to move fast.
Funeral. Yep, he wants to move fast. Going to wait for the Ginsburg funeral. And by the way, Big Apple Joe made a good point in the last break, saying that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was well known for her dissents, her dissenting opinions.
Yes,
and he's right. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and come up with 100 examples for you on any of that, but
right.
The you know, again, her ability to articulate her opinion and present it in a way that made sense to people, I think was very important. And that right there is something that I will miss from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, no question.
Well, and that's the thing, that sort of thing is of tremendous value to a system like ours, because whether you align yourself as a conservative or a liberal, somewhere in between, I'm an independent, I'm a this label, I'm a that label, any one of those groups or any other group that I didn't even mention, if they get too much power in our system, if there is no voice of dissent, or if they, you know, if they take too much power, then we're looking at a whole different sort of way of life here. You know, liberty is threatened by the singular opinion, by the monolith of just one group's ideals. And so if we want to call ourselves sons and daughters of liberty, we have to have the liberty to think of issues from a variety of perspectives and have well-reasoned opinions coming to us from those perspectives.
Right. The genius of the way that the country was set up, it it's exposed on a daily basis, but every 4 years it becomes evident again. I mean, there's a reason that mm-hmm. there's that the Electoral College is there. There is a reason. Yes. So that each state can have a say in who is elected as president without mm-hmm. being run over, without yes. being run over. There is a reason that in the Senate, each state has two senators. There's a reason that there's the same number of representatives as there is Electoral College votes. Everything mm-hmm. is a mm-hmm. balance. Yeah. If you get rid of the Electoral College, some would argue that you need to get rid of the House of Representatives to keep things in balance.
Right.
Yeah. You know, everything is fascinating. And then the judicial system, you know, there's some things happening right now that have got me scratching my head a little bit about decisions over the election in particular. You know, anything, there's Michigan. There was a judge in Michigan that ruled that if a vote is postmarked by November 2nd, that they should have up to 2 weeks after that to be able to count that vote. Really? Where's the law that says that, Judge? Because I thought judges are supposed to interpret the law and enforce it, not make it. So, you know, overreach comes in many different forms and shapes, Davis.
Yes. Yes.
And
yes.
You know it when you see it. Let's just put it that way. Hey, thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. Ben Brown from Ohio State University is going to be my guest. Tomorrow morning, Ethan Lane from NCBA, Paul Nafer, Clifton Larson Allen, right here on AgriTalk.